Waiting is a major part of the experience of becoming a mother, yet we rarely talk about it or give it the attention it deserves. From the 2-week wait while trying to conceive, to the waiting for your chance of becoming pregnant after months and months of trying, to the waiting for a new treatment or change to impact your fertility, to the waiting for your baby to grow in the 9 to 10 months of pregnancy, and to the challenging wait for baby to arrive as you pass your due date. Becoming a mother can involve a lot of waiting. Dr. Morgan and I break this down and share our own experiences of being in the current throes of waiting. Her waiting for her new baby to come as she is now past her due date, and me waiting to conceive via IVF, a process that has been pushed back almost 8 months due to various factors. I share the wisdom I have learned from years and years of waiting along our fertility journey, and we share some golden nuggets you do not want to miss. Let's dive right in. Welcome to Healthy as a Mother, the podcast for becoming and being a mother, with your co-hosts, Dr. Leah Gordon and Dr. Morgan McDermott, two naturopathic doctors who get it.
Each week, we teach you how to be the healthiest mother you can be, from fertility and preconception to pregnancy and birth prep, through postpartum and throughout motherhood, empowering you with the natural health guidance and education you're not getting elsewhere, so you can confidently navigate the broken system at large.
The real, the raw, the untalked about. And remember, this information is not intended to diagnose, treat, or manage any disease. Always consult with your doctor before making any changes. Today, we are talking about a very interesting part of becoming a mother, which is waiting. And waiting is, unfortunately, a very common part of the path toward motherhood, and it's not fun, and it can bring with it a lot of stuff. So we're going to talk about waiting and all of the different elements from, you know, the trying to conceive time to becoming pregnant to the actual pregnancy, the waiting for babies to come in labor, the just waiting. So let's start with our own experiences. This is going to be kind of a personal share episode, is more than like an educational one. But the first part of waiting and motherhood that we want to highlight is the trying to conceive time. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of women kind of expect optimistically, which is great because it does happen for some, that they just make the decision to want to have a baby and they try and get pregnant and there is not a lot of waiting. However,
boom, there it is. It just happens.
Boom, there it is. However, for a lot of people, that's not the case. And there's this really challenging waiting time during the what we call trying to conceive season when you are having sex and then you have to wait for 2 weeks to find out if you're pregnant or not.
And it can be like the longest 2 weeks of your life.
So long. Time seems to slow down when you're waiting for stuff, when you want something that's going to change the entire trajectory of your life. You know, you're waiting for this. It's more than a present. It's more than, you know, of a holiday. You know, those are other things that people are excited about waiting for, but it's something that you can't control. You know, you're hoping, you're praying, and you have no control over it. And you're just stuck in this waiting limbo time.
Limbo. Yeah.
Yeah.
And the transition really of that kind of limbo space is so, I mean, we live out 2 week chunks of time all the time, obviously. Mm-hmm. And sometimes to me, 2 weeks can feel like, you know, the course of 3 days or something. Like if totally. It's a very busy time and it's just like, holy crap, you know, like, especially with months, I feel like when new months change over, I'm always just shocked by it. I'm like, oh, it's not September, it's not October, it's not November. Like, you know what I mean? And then, mm-hmm. but then when you're really wanting something and, you know, anxiously waiting to see what's going to happen, it can feel like each day is just going on and on and on. And that's sort of the weird perspective shift of being super present to your life versus like kind of being swept up in the busyness of everything. It is definitely ideal to stay and remain busy during a lot mm-hmm. of these periods of time that yeah. we'll be talking about. But yeah, it is that the length of your cycle, especially if you have long cycles. So if mm-hmm. you're like a 28 day or less person, you know, it can feel a lot less daunting. But if you are somebody who's on a like, just very consistent 35, 40 day cycle or something, there's a lot more time that mm-hmm. each go around that doesn't necessarily work or stick or produce a baby that you have to feel out and just yeah. kind of wait in anguish.
Yeah. And, you know, big life update. We haven't made this announcement yet on the podcast, but I moved to Idaho.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. That's crazy. We didn't.
Yeah. We haven't announced it. And so I live near you, which is the best thing ever.
Like 12 minutes away.
You know, I just had an appointment today and the woman's like, oh, when did you move? And I was thinking back and I was like, oh my gosh, it's been like almost 4 weeks. And that went so fast. I feel like it was a blink. Yet the 2 week wait, you know, from ovulation to getting a pregnancy test can feel like eternity. Or mm-hmm. in your situation, or when waiting for a baby, you know, when Avia was not coming. I mean, it felt like the 2 weeks from my due date to when she came was like 7 months. I just felt like it was forever. And so it is really challenging in those times. And, you know, we'll talk about a few tips that we have for managing that. But I just want to give acknowledgement to the 2 week wait that happens. And then in the trying to conceive time, you have to then wait for your period to be done. You have to wait for ovulation to come back around. And then you have to wait again for 2 weeks. And there's so much waiting.
Mm-hmm. And you're not able to really participate or do much except have sex in the optimal window. Like, that's the only thing that you get to feel like you participate in. Mm-hmm. And it kind of reminds me of the analogy, of course, I always think about birth with things, but a lot of women really dislike labor, but they like pushing because mm-hmm. they felt involved. They felt like they were a part of it or doing something or actually making a difference, et cetera. Whereas when you're just at the whim of contractions, you sort of are powerless and having, you know, whatever, there's not that much involvement. And so it's almost sort of the same thing. It's like when you can choose to have sex, or if you're doing fertility treatments, like when you're actively doing something that's going to help towards creating this baby, that can feel fulfilling, but it's short-lived. And then there's a whole other time where you're just sitting there and hoping that it's all gone well and really planning and tripping out in your head. I mean, I always say to people too, it's just like, as soon as you get that positive pregnancy test, it can just be a couple of hours have gone by that you've known you're pregnant and you've planned out like the next decade or two of your life.
Yeah.
Your brain works so much faster than the reality of time. And mm-hmm. in this space, usually when people are trying to conceive, a lot of the time they want a newborn yesterday.
Yeah.
Like, they don't want to do the whole, at least that's how I've always felt, is that mm-hmm. when I have tried to get pregnant, I've already been really, really wanting and waiting for a baby for a while.
Yeah.
And I didn't even have to, like, I'm so lucky. Like, I didn't even have to wait to get pregnant
mm-hmm.
because I would get pregnant easily. Like, for you, 6 years?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, what in the world? What did you do? How did you cope with that? Like, what did you just have to forget about it and be like, I'm not even thinking about this? Or what'd you do?
You know, it was so hard along our journey because I'm such an optimist. And this is the other part of the waiting of fertility is, you know, going to a new doctor, seeing a new treatment, doing something. You know, we would do something feeling like, okay, this is it. This is what's going to like make the difference. This is what's going to change, you know, sperm or some outcome. And then we'd have to wait for 3 months before we could do another semen analysis to see if that did anything.
Gosh.
And it's, you know, you feel so there was the whole initial trying where you really are hopeful. For us, again, if people know my story, we found out about his sperm before we started trying. So I always knew we were up against an issue, but I had so much faith that we'd be that, you know, success story that just got pregnant despite people telling us we never would. And, you know, people like a girl we went to school with would come up to me and say, oh, my husband was told he had no sperm. And every summer we would try and we'd get pregnant every summer. And I'm like, something is off with that because you got pregnant 1,000 times when you never hardly saw your husband. And I know you were told that you have no sperm. And so I held on to stories like that where I'm like, well, if she did it with a husband with no sperm, we can do it too. And so it's really challenging because hope is kind of what gets you through in certain ways. But then depending on your level of anxiety and depending on your level of being okay with being uncomfortable, it can be really, really challenging. And I think that there's a lot of lessons that infertility can teach that are challenging to learn. But one of them is becoming comfortable with being uncomfortable and learning to accept that you can't control everything around you, which was a big lesson for me, which is surrender, right? Because I think we especially were grown up in a very privileged environment where, for the most part, anything I wanted or needed, I could get, right? If I wanted to bake a pie, I would just go to the grocery store and buy the things to make a pie. If I had a desire to go to college, I just went to college. I could choose whatever major I wanted. If I wanted to buy a car, I would just work and save up money and I could buy the car. Like, a lot of the things that I wanted were within my control, and the level of my dedication, my hard work, my resources, my support around me. And I think one of the hardest things to accept is that becoming a mother is not the outcome of how hard you work. It's not the outcome of how much resources you have. It's not the outcome of privilege or not. It's like you are literally at the whim of biology and you can't force its hand. And I think that that realization is even harder in today's world, where outside of biology, we really almost can create and have whatever we want.
Yeah, I think about this all the time. I'm so glad that you brought that point up, because I especially for women who are in higher education jobs or have gone through a lot of like academia or challenge of some form with their work or their, I don't know, for some reason, I just always think about it with work, but you're right. It is kind of with anything. But we, for years and years and years before we became mothers, had that lived body embodied experience that if I wanted an A, I would study as much as I knew I needed to, and I would get it. I would just get it. And if I wasn't doing it as well as to my standard, I've always been academically very competitive with myself. I feel like you are as well. We're not really as much with other people. It's just like I had the standards that I wanted to achieve, and by God, I was going to do it. To all kinds of sacrifices and whatever. And I just had that experience over and over and time again of getting that, you know, putting more effort in and getting the outcome. And all of motherhood, this is such a good analogy for all of it, with parenting, with everything. You are no longer just dancing with yourself. You are part of something with another being, another person. And it's a very, to me, it was a very long, slow, hard thing to fully accept. I fought it for a very long time throughout the life of the first year with my son. I think that was another thing, actually. I was talking about this with a friend this week that made it really feel more challenging to me. I know that a lot of my postpartum anxiety came from breastfeeding issues, but I think it was also such a huge loss of my identity, because I was very tied up in my identity being that I was just hyper successful in whatever I wanted to be successful in.
Exactly.
And I was not successful with balancing and managing motherhood and the middle of school. And then, you know, like watching breastfeeding almost slip away from me as well. I was like it was the first time that I felt like something wasn't coming easily to me. And then even when I put all of that time and effort and energy into it, I wasn't getting any tangible results back that were showing me that the effort was worth it. And similarly, when you're in this kind of trying to conceive and you're just, and then you're doing all these things, and you and Mike, especially, you know, doing the heavy metals detox and the varicocele surgery and doing all these things. And it's like, you guys put so much time and effort and work in it over the course of years and years and years. And it was like, nothing changed, like nothing. That would be just maddening. Like, that would feel, and because it's really probably the only time in your life that something like this has ever even happened, where you've put so much time and effort and then didn't see results budge, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what I'm saying is, like, you know, if people are like, well, what's some advice for the waiting time? And I'm sure I can come up with some, and we can definitely chat about it. But I would say, more than advice of like what to do, is this, when you have to go through so many periods of things not turning out the way you want, especially when you're a person who's not used to that, it was a huge, huge lesson for me, right? We all have our own lessons to learn. The fertility journey was crazy because, yeah, I mean, I literally could create and have anything else, you know, that I've ever wanted out of hard work, out of resources, out of, it's not because I was just handed everything on a silver platter. Like, I've worked really hard, like you said, but working harder doesn't necessarily make fertility happen. I was applying that though to our fertility journey. I was like, well, if we just keep digging, if we just keep working, if we just keep throwing resources at it, if we just keep, you know, then eventually it has to work because this is how everything has ever worked, you know, and it, that what that process taught me. And eventually, obviously, we did do IVF and it did work, obviously, in that regard. But I learned such a powerful lesson through trying to conceive naturally and not having to go that route. It was that you are humbled by the process of surrender. And I don't know how to like get someone to learn that without going through that process. And I know I teach this in my fertility formula and stuff, but I feel like it's one of the most powerful lessons that we learn on our path to motherhood is the surrendering. And I just don't think we, at least in our, in the United States, in our, you know, privileged world, I just don't think surrendering to things we can't control in every sense of the way is something that we have a lot of experience with.
No, it's not part of our culture just growing up. We're like right. The convenience culture. We're yes. Faster, better, stronger, faster. I already said faster, but you know, like I want to put as little effort in to get the maximum outcome. And if I don't get it right now, I'm going to, you know, figure out some kind of way to just, yeah, it's horrible. Yeah. We're the worst, and it, I feel.
Yeah. And I think it's highlighted in the struggle that does come with the trying to conceive time. And I see it, you know, happen with women who just start. And it's, you know, just the 2 weeks alone of waiting is like torture, you know, and that's what I'm trying to highlight. It's like, why is it torture? Why are we so tortured by waiting? What is that? And it is, yeah, it's like we want something and we want it yesterday. And I think a lot of us just expect that we'll get that. I don't think that we're we aren't prepared. I don't think anything in our culture prepares us for the waiting. And even like, even if someone's like, okay, you want to start having a baby, no one sits you down and is like, oh, by the way, did you know there's going to be a lot of waiting? Yeah. You know, not even like we're not prepared to handle waiting. I don't even think it's cognitively on our mind that that's a part of it. You know, and I think that people really get tripped out when they have to actually live in the 2 week waits, the month after month, you know, failed pregnancy tests, like all of these things. And then once it comes to birth, this idea that the baby might not come right at your due date and like how trippy that is because we not only are not prepared for it, I don't even think many women are even told really. Like it's like you kind of stumble into this and then it's just we have a really hard time because there is zero preparation for the waiting.
And we have like a big lack of trusting the process with things and delayed gratification and, you know, it's almost like there's a spiritual component of this whole thing that other cultures I feel like could potentially lean on. And this is, I'm not thinking of anybody specific, any culture specifically, but it just, there's like a feeling that I'm getting when I'm thinking about the way I see other cultures practiced and places around the world versus in the States. It's just different. And this like Western culture, I mean, there's other ones that are like us too in this, but there is, there's no respect for sort of the mystery in life here because we'll just change it. It's like, you don't like the way you look, you just go get plastic surgery. You don't like the weather, you just change it. Like, and that's cloud seeding. Like that's not to be conspiracy theorists. Like we're doing that. If you don't think we're doing that, I don't know what to tell you. Sorry. But like that used to be the one thing, honestly, when I was growing up, I was like, I love the weather because all humans are just subject to it and we don't get to change it.
Yeah,
we
right.
Have to be, I know. And we just have to be like surrendered to it. And it's like, okay, well, we know that's not true.
Yeah, we know that's not happening.
Yeah, but like there's almost nothing in our life that has just this like magical component to it. And then, I mean, because there are reproductive technologies too, if you have the resources, you don't have to do this at all. You don't have to, or not that you don't have to at all, because it's not completely guaranteed, even if you do IVF. Mm-hmm. And yes, then there's like surrogates or adoption, which there's still a lot of waiting there because they don't necessarily get pregnant right away, or your adoption. I mean, geez, the waiting that comes along with adoption sometimes just blows my absolute mind. Like I know that there's a lot of vetting and everything. I don't understand the process very well at all. It can feel though very, very drastic how long couples will wait in order to want to adopt a baby. You know, when there's so many babies all the time, it's like, what is going on? And I know that there's, we need to interview somebody about that because
I know we should.
I'd love to know about it more.
Same. Yeah. No, but even in the IVF space, the waiting, I mean, I remember, you know, you have to wait. I mean, right now I have a client who has to wait to be approved to get into an IVF clinic. And then, you know, you have to wait for your period or you have to wait for something to happen. And then you do the egg retrieval and then you have to wait to hear about your embryos. And then you have to wait to do a frozen embryo transfer. I mean, there's so much waiting. And I think no matter which path you go down the fertility time, I think for us after 6 years, it almost became, it's practiced, right? It's just like any skill that initially is the hardest and it's the most painful, like exercise. You know, if you've never ran a marathon or whatever, and you go try to run a couple miles, it's going to really hurt a lot. And anything that you do initially is the most painful, the most challenging.
And you're going to suck at it too. Like you're just, the learning curve of learning how to handle it is steep until it's not anymore because you're such an expert.
Right. And so that's, you know, for me, I felt like our fertility journey, it taught me a practiced skill that is practiced. And I did have many, many years. So you say like, what did you do for 6 years? I don't know. I think I just became practiced. I didn't necessarily become numb. I was constantly trying to have a baby. And every time I had saw another pregnancy announcement, every time I went over to my family's house for the holidays, I mean, I was on the verge of tears all the time. It never got easier necessarily, but the waiting did, because I think it's practice and the practicing of surrendering and all of that. But I thought I had learned my lesson. And when I got pregnant, I really thought all of those lessons had been learned. And this segues into the birth, you know, waiting for birth, where I really thought I had had the hard part. You know, our fertility journey and my pregnancy was pretty tough, like just from being sick. So I thought surely my birth will be easy. And I just didn't – I was really blindsided by the fact that Avia wasn't coming, you know, when she was supposed to.
Let's take a quick break to hear from our sponsors. It's so hard to find good quality supplements that are safe to take while trying to conceive and while pregnant. And it's even harder to find ones that support your immune system, that taste good, and that actually work. Dr. Morgan and I just have to say we are so grateful for the immune support powder by Needed right now. I am 1 month away from implanting my embryo and she is about to give birth. We are both taking Needed's immune support to protect ourselves in this crazy cold and flu season that is happening right now. This product is pure magic. It has zinc, elderberry, and postbiotics to support the immune system, and it tastes delicious. My daughter actually requests it as her red juice. Since it's a powder, it's easy for the whole family to take, and you can take it not only pregnant, but also during breastfeeding as well. We all need as much help as we can during this season, so we highly recommend you order some for yourself. Visit thisisneeded.com and use code HEALTHYMOTHER to save 20% off your first order. Again, visit thisisneeded.com and use code HEALTHYMOTHER to save 20%. Okay, now back to the show.
And I remember specifically, you were there with me. You flew out for my birth. And I remember specifically thinking, oh my gosh, I cannot believe I have to wait again. You know, because for those who follow my story, you know, 6 years of infertility, waiting, 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 trying treatments for my husband, waiting, waiting, waiting. And then we decided to do IVF finally. And that was when COVID hit and they shut us down. And we had to wait another 6 months before we could do IVF because of COVID.
Oh my gosh, I forgot. forgot about that.
So
that felt like the rudest slap in the face.
Oh my God. Every point along the way, I'm like, are we not meant to be parents? Because this is psycho. Like finally, after years and years of therapy, I have wrapped my brain around the idea that the only way we can have children is to pray that my husband has sperm through IVF. We still didn't know at that point if he had any. And we finally made the decision. I interview all the clinics. We get ready to go. I was getting ready to take the medication for my round when they emailed us and said, you know, because of the COVID shutdowns, we are no longer doing IVF runs and we don't know when we will ever begin again. I was like, are you kidding? You know, and that was when the shutdown happened where I'm like, Mike and I can't run away to the forest and have a family. I have to be in a city with medical people to have a child. And that felt so unfair, especially in a crisis like that, where, you know, it felt like the appropriate thing to do was to run away to a forest and just like, you know, hunt for your own food and make your own bread. Right. It's like, if I did that, I would be childless. And that felt very frustrating. And like the waiting to just be at the mercy of like, what is COVID going to do? Are we ever going to be able to have children? Like, are we ever going to be able to do IVF? Are they ever going to open up again? Are they going to require crazy medical things in order to like have children now? Like, so that was a really hard waiting time. And at that time was when I started a support group for IVF during that waiting, because we were all waiting. but it was also during that time of the waiting that with the support group that I realized, you know, how much suffering there really is in the fertility space. And that also, it made it easier in some ways, but also harder for the wait, because then it kind of fills your mind with all of these like potentials I didn't even think about that could have happened or could be happening. And I realized that it's probably not the best for me to hold space for people in this time in a support group type of environment. But once I did get pregnant, Avia did not come on time. And I remember thinking, I've had so many of these times where I have to just wait and be patient and surrender and to this process that's completely out of my control, my biggest lesson. And I wasn't necessarily prepared to have more of those lessons. So it was really hard. You did
handle it really well. Like, I am not handling this. Like,
I know. Okay. So for everyone who doesn't know, you are a week past your due date.
Yeah.
I'm
somewhere between. So I was actually recalculating out today. So this, bear with me here if you're not into like numbers and dates, but I was looking at it. My last menstrual period was January 17th, 2023, which would actually make my due date based on a 28 day cycle today.
Oh.
Which would mean I'm 40 weeks today.
Oh.
I know. But the reason why I went with the 21st is because I have short cycles and I ovulate early. And I know that about myself. I have 25-day cycles. So I bumped myself up 3 days to the 21st. So I was like, my 40 weeks is the 21st. Then all of my other kids, okay, it's not like this is my first rodeo. So I've had three other kids who I had my conception-based due date. So for this baby, we're thinking it's October 21st, okay? My conception-based due date with all the other kids, okay, rah, 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 whatever. Then when I would go to get the anatomy scan, my kids are long and, you know, I'm tall, my husband's tall. And it would always – they'd always give you like an adjusted due date. And it would always be like 3 to 5 days earlier than my conception-based due date. And I had noted – I went back and I like looked at all of them, and because in my cycle app – I still have all of their pregnancies in my same one app, Kendara. I haven't ever changed.
Yes, like, I love it.
Faithful Kendara user. And all of the kids have come between those two dates that were given, between the anatomy scan due date given and the conception-based due date. And it's a small window of time. And so in my mind, I'd always like kind of worked it out that like my kids have come within a day or two of their due date, because it's sort of just this like window of due date time, right? So that date, based on the anatomy scan for this baby, was October 17th. So it was – my window was between the 17th and the 21st. But now I'm kind of realizing I'm like – so I'm either 41 weeks today or I'm 40 plus 3. So I'm really not that far along. Mm-hmm. And here's the thing. I think if I'd had no contractions and no signs of labor, I would be like chilling.
Yeah.
I would be a little bit like, this is – like odd. Okay, I'm going longer and later. But the thing that's tripping me up about this time period of waiting is this prodromal labor stuff that I'm experiencing. And yeah. I'm just like, you didn't really have that much prodromal labor. You had some cramping and things, but I felt like your attitude was so good. I was so surprised. I mean, I know we were having like the best 3 weeks of our life together waiting with your mom in California and just like going on walks and eating really good food. It was so much fun, but you also seemed so happy and positive. And I know there was like a couple of harder moments and harder days and stuff, but it's this freaking 42-week law that trips everybody up because it's like, oh, you have a time clock. And then that does not help a woman's body feel relaxed and primed and safe to go into labor either. It's such a mean thing. And, you know, the midwives in California are kind of under like maybe some of the worst state restrictions, I feel like, than other midwives. And so they really, really have to abide by and uphold this because they just get slammed if they do anything wrong ever. And so it was like, yeah, this is, you know, your date was coming up, your date was coming up. And it was just like, where is this baby? Where's this baby? And then you were kind of having some signs, like there was, you know, you lost your mucus plug that one day and she stripped your membranes a couple times. You were like 1 centimeter. And it was, yeah, it was just kind of like every day. And then I didn't want you to feel like a watched pot either. Like I didn't want there to be an element where, because I was in town and your mom was in town, that you felt pressured, which I think probably in retrospect you did.
Yeah, I did, but it wasn't because you guys pressured me. It was all internal pressure, right? And I appreciate you acknowledging that you felt like I handled it well because I feel like her coming late in the waiting and the fact that we had to do a C-section. It's like we've talked about this many times. I was actually really proud of myself because of how I handled it. And I know it's because it was like I went to this weird, I didn't, and I'm not going to give myself this kind of credit, but it was like I went to this weird Buddha, you know, retreat for 6 years learning like surrender and acceptance. And not that I'm perfect and I, you know, still have issues with things, but I remember how incredibly hard it was for me to accept our fertility journey and how many hours and hours and hours of therapy and practitioners and crying and internal turmoil that I went through for years, that by the time it came to the waiting for her birth, it was still kind of trippy because I really wasn't expecting it to be that. But especially when I ended up having to wait in labor, right? My labor had to wait forever for her. And then it ended up in a C-section. I specifically remember that moment when we made the decision in the hospital that I was so proud of myself because I feel like I went to the place of acceptance so fast. And it did feel like I was just flexing a muscle that I had been strengthening for so long. And I know that if I hadn't had all of that before, that the waiting for her and the C-section part would have been so hard, you know, because it would have been the first time. Yeah. That would have been the first time. Like, let's say my getting pregnant was perfectly easy. That would have been the very first time that anything ever didn't go my way and in my control. And that is for some people their reality. And, you know, I was thinking about that for you. I know you had a really hard postpartum with Gage, but like you really relatively haven't had that much struggle getting pregnant, being pregnant, or having babies.
Totally.
And totally. So
this is like the first time that I'm being like, what? Especially that, like, when it comes to birth.
Birth, it's the first thing that really hasn't gone almost textbook for you.
Yeah. Yeah. And it isn't, I don't have 6 years of practice. No. And I will just say, like, just to bring it back to that, you like, okay. I remember one time when we were on a walk and it was getting really close to the 42 weeks. You hadn't gone into labor yet. And we were talking about the idea of what if you have to be transferred to the hospital and you were saying, and it was a big connection in my mind, but I hadn't quite thought about this. You were like, this just seems so unfair. Like my fertility had to be my becoming pregnant had to be completely medically managed and I didn't want it to be that way. And I wanted it to be natural more than anything. And I tried so hard for so long and it just couldn't be in the end. And you're like, and I did all of this stuff but just in the end, it just couldn't be. And then you're like, and you know, the pregnancy, just real quick about waiting and pregnancy. I feel like because you're pregnant, it's a little easier. It's like, you know, it's a finite amount of time of waiting. It's not this ambiguous thing, right? Like, you know that at the end there is a baby and you're at least in the process. It can still feel like a limbo, and sometimes it feels overwhelming. It feels long, like, especially if you have a very hard pregnancy, you don't like being pregnant, you're sick, etc. But it just feels a little bit different, whereas there's these other windows that can feel really crazy making. So anyway, we're on this walk and you're like, and I can't believe that I've done all this prep to have a home birth and a natural birth of any kind, wherever it happens, you know, and I might not be able to get that. It's still going to be medically managed because they would transfer you to the hospital and then induce you. So it was something, you know, Pitocin, Cytotec, whatever. So you were like, I just can't believe that this is happening again. And at the end, it's going to be medically managed. And I just don't want that. And you're a naturopathic doctor and you've spent your entire life learning all these things so that you don't have to participate in this side of the way that we do medicine. You know what I mean? You're like an expert on the other side. And then, but then for you in this time period, it has all just lined up in this way. And it was just like, wow, why is that? Why is this happening? This is crazy. And I remember you did have some emotions and some tears then, which I'm really proud of you because I know that it's hard for you to
That's why I handle things so well. Wow, you're so good at burying your emotions.
I was really proud of you because I know how hard it is for you to cry and how important it is.
It is so important. I wish it could happen more.
I know. You gotta externally process. You just talk to me and then you gotta let the tears flow. But anyway, it was kind of an interesting analogy and connection point. But then when we were there at the hospital, when the whole thing had gone down and it was like, okay, we're making this game time decision to have a C-section, which I felt like everybody was really on the same page about. And it felt very empowering for you. You guys got to make the decision. It wasn't rushed. It wasn't scary, which is a great privilege, you know, because oftentimes actually cesareans are not like that. And it was, and you were given the opportunity by the OB too, to wait more.
It was like, She was like, you can wait a few more hours. I was like at 4 centimeters after 56 hours.
Yeah, she was like, we can do this for like another day if you want to. She's like, I don't think it's going to be any time sooner than like another day or so. And we were just like, dang, you know, like this baby, I don't know. Like it just felt not right. But you, I would have expected because how much you, I know you hate hospitals. You hate getting medication. You don't do well with medication. You don't do well with pharmaceuticals ever. And they make you feel like crap and you're so sensitive and all these things. And you were just like so calm. Mike was not calm. Mike and I were not calm. You were very, very calm. And then your perception of it afterwards too, you seemed to process through disappointment like in a microsecond. You were like, well, this is just the way it is. It's truly, it's like you accepted it and you moved through it. And it wasn't like it was stuck and it wasn't like you were dissociating. It wasn't like you were shoving it down. It had just like, froom, like you just decided to make it go through. And then here was this beautiful baby in your arms and like none of that mattered. It was, you were just so happy. And then, you know, even immediately, I think the second, maybe day, third day that you were home and out of the hospital and we were kind of trying to talk about it. And I didn't really know what to expect. I didn't know how, it seemed like you were really happy, but I wanted to give you the opportunity to talk and process and just say like, you know, like how was your birth and stuff. And you were like, my birth was great. You were so happy about it. And I thought that was so cool. So I really give props to you. Obviously you have learned through all of this waiting and it really does have a purpose. So there is a benefit to it all for sure.
Yeah. I think the thing I want to leave people with, if I look back on my experience, again, this is my experience. It is only my experience. Everyone has different experiences and I'm not trying to project anyone else's, but from my experience, I have lived through enough. I'm not like this crazy, you know, soldier who's been through thousands of things. Like I haven't, you know, my life has been so easy in so many ways. But I think my experience of all the waiting paired with a positivity and a faith that I have, I think has happened enough where I look back and I say, sometimes in the middle of the hardest stuff, it just feels like, A, it's never going to end and that this is so hard. But when you have enough experiences where it ends up okay in the end, you start to have faith that if another hard thing comes up again, go to the faith faster, right? Like shift into like, this is not in my control. Control the things you can control. I'm not saying like, don't ever change your diet. Don't ever try to improve your fertility. Like, that's not what I'm saying. Don't try to, you know, change your baby's position and do all the things to help with labor. Change, like, control the things you can control, but accept the things you cannot change, right? That's that quote. Change the things you can change, accept the things you can't, and do it quickly, right?
Yeah.
Because there's only suffering that comes from holding on to things you cannot control with this grip that is like strangulating you and the situation, and it doesn't change the outcome.
Mm-hmm.
You can change your experience of your life by shifting your perspective. So change the things you can change, control the things you can control, and accept the things you can't as soon as possible. Surrender to the process of biology, because this is a lesson that women are meant to learn to make us better mothers, to make us the beings that we have to be to raise other human beings. If we do not learn this lesson, we will learn it eventually in motherhood, because it's necessary to get through life, in my opinion. And the only difference between the rate of how fast you accept something is the amount you suffer. That's
it. Yeah, it's so good. It's so true. You're still going to, you can continue to hold on to it with a kung fu grip and exactly. just suffer. Yeah,
yeah, exactly.
But guess what? Nothing's going to change. And about parenting and how it is, it's such a prep for mm-hmm. what is to come for the next 18, you know, years of your life, really your whole entire life though, because we never stop parenting, is like, you're going to make your child's life absolutely hell, and you're going to traumatize them if you continue. And that's a pattern that happens in people's lives, is like, totally. Their parents are so controlling
mm-hmm.
and at some point it has to get broken. But if we can like relax and ease into this and do the best that we can and then let go of the rest, that's really the best thing. I love that. And for me right now, it's like, okay, whatever. I don't know what to make of this prodromal labor. I don't know what to make of these contractions and losing mucus plug and having so many cramps and so much sensation and then just nothing. And it's like, that has never happened to me before. That is another like element to this that is good and cool, I guess, is to learn from each of your kids, because they're all so different, mm-hmm. is like, your next baby may come at like 38 weeks.
Yeah.
Who knows? And that'll be shocking for everyone, because it won't be what you thought. But it happens. And mm-hmm. I would have thought my fourth baby was going to come, if anything, maybe not even. I was worried about not making it to her due date.
Yeah.
Because I wasn't ready and I had all these things going on and blah, 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 blah. And I was really trying to give her a quick, you know, a strong energetic signal of, hey, yo, listen, like, you cannot come right now. I am busy. You got to wait. And then now here I am just being like, where is this baby? Mm-hmm. And what? You're just teasing me all the time. And I'm in this weird limbo where I don't know, like, every day, should we go and try to hang out? Should I make a plan? I should probably stay like within an hour of the house, but oh, there's another contraction. Okay. Well, maybe that one's the first start of the real thing. Like, I just don't know what's going on. And, I've never experienced this before. And so many women have written me, I've been really like talking about it a lot on Instagram, and so many people, this has been their experience with all of their babies. And I'm really lucky that I haven't had to experience this before. Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to keep that in perspective. I'm trying to keep a lot of different things in perspective. And like you said, I know that it is in the end, it's temporary. Like, I'm not going mm-hmm. to wait forever. This baby is going to come out. It sometimes really, truly doesn't feel like that though. It's so weird. It really doesn't. And I, you know, when you're the one at this point, at the end of pregnancy, just wanting your baby to come out, it's like such a strange thing, because 6 months ago, Morgan would have been able to counsel and talk to a woman who is in my exact position now and be like, this is normal. Prodromal labor is normal. The baby's going to come, saying all the inspirational things, all the stuff that I really, truly feel like I can't connect to right now. Like, I cannot mm-hmm. be in that headspace. But today, actually, I feel a lot better. I've shifted my mindset. I'm just like, I don't care what happens. I know that she's coming at some point in the next 2 weeks, you know, crazy long. And I don't think that it's actually going to take that long, but who knows? Maybe it would. Maybe there's already lessons that she's teaching me in that, like, hey, all of these things could be different. And also just so that I have more empathy for women who do go late, because I've never had this experience before.
Yeah.
And so it hasn't been a part of my story. And now I will be able to be like, yo, I get it. I understand. And prodromal labor, I'd never had that before. So there's a couple of things about this where I'm like, okay, you know, being that this is my last baby, and I feel like also this experience is concreting that this is the last baby. I don't want to do this again. I don't want to do, but I also, it's also just because four is a lot. Like, four is a lot of kids in 2023. But anyway, I know in my mind it could be, you know, tonight. Who knows? It could be in 14 days.
I know. And that is the surrender that is so hard. And it is hard when you're in it. And it's okay to feel what you're feeling. And I think, you know, women should know that it's okay to feel what you're feeling. You don't need to be this like Zen master. I accept all the things. Like, it is
true.
Perfectly normal and important to process, to cry, to feel all of the things. And I think you're doing a really good job of that. You know, you're moving through all of the things, you're moving through the emotions, you're zooming out and looking down on yourself, and you're going into it, into the experience. And I think all of that's important because there is a lesson here, and we won't know what that lesson is until you're on the other side of it. So you're along for a ride. It's like a roller coaster. And we're just going to see, it's a roller coaster that is being built that no one knows where the end of it is. So.
Yeah. Limbo is, transition is inherently painful.
Yeah.
And transition of all, and I mean, of course, now here I am, I'm thinking about birth again. The transition part of birth mm-hmm. is the hardest, most women report, you know, not always, but it's almost like just being that butterfly soup in the cocoon. Like, that can't feel good for them. I'm sure that's not fun.
Yeah.
But it's because they're in between states. And it's like being in between, we want to just feel concrete in something. We want to yep. be pregnant or know that we're not.
Yes.
But we don't want to wait to find out.
Right, right.
We want to know and we want to move forward with that. And then we want to be in labor or not, or have a mm-hmm. baby in your arms already or not, or whatever. It's this whole, it's ungrounding maybe. And it mm-hmm. does, it feels kind of ethereal and stuff. And I feel like maybe if we were more connected to some kind of a cultural or spiritual tenet about that. I mean, I don't know. I just think of like Native Americans would have some kind of like beautiful explanation, for this mm-hmm. time period. It's like this auspicious time and it's cool to be revered and all these different things. And like, we mm-hmm. just lost that because there has to be something throughout human culture that they've helped to conceptualize what this is.
Yeah.
And modern Americans just don't get to experience that. It's a bummer. We need to like kind of tap into that more. But anyways, okay. Well, thank you for sharing your story. And I think that you, this is, it's like one of those skills that you wish you could put on your resume. Not like you need a resume, but like, yeah. I am really good at cycling through levels of waiting and disappointment mm-hmm. and coming to acceptance and surrender fast. You are, not me, but you, because of your experience.
Well, I wasn't at first. I just want people to know that. That's what I'm saying. It's a practice skill. I mean, I couldn't even say the word IVF for probably 3 years. Like, I couldn't even say it.
I remember trying to be like, Leah, what are you going to do? What's the plan? What's the plan? What's the plan?
I literally like, don't even bring it up. Like, I couldn't. Like, it's
yeah,
like,
you wouldn't even talk about it.
No, I couldn't even talk about it. So talk about not accepting, right? Yeah. I was like, we are not even going to utter those words because the lump in my throat would, you know, I would be on the verge of tears. I couldn't even handle it. I couldn't even handle the idea that that can't be it. That can't be the answer. We can't even go there. So
there was so much resistance, but then now here we are and your sweet baby girl is absolutely perfect. So,
yeah. So that's what we want to leave you with, is in the waiting time, you know, tap into acceptance, tap into surrender, release resistance as much as you can after you've processed your emotions. And yeah, life's a wild ride. Becoming a mother is no joke.
Okay, wait, and we're going to go, but I just have to say we didn't even talk about, and we're not going to, but we didn't even talk about how you're waiting right now to conceive again and to do your transfer. You were going to, real quick timeline, you were going to do it in April. And
here
we are, it's the end of October and you've had to keep waiting and things have been getting pushed back. And like, you're just such a G, you're just so good at it.
No, like I was supposed to, because right. My C-section made me have to get a procedure to check my uterus. And then I had polyps. I ended up having polyps. So my DNC pulled out more polyps and then we moved and it's like everything. Yeah. I was supposed to transfer in May and now it's almost November and I'm still waiting. Hopefully, knock on wood, you know. But again, if something happened, if some crazy thing happened that like delayed it, that's where like I'm at the place where I'm like, yeah, of course, because it's like, we just have to accept it. Like I literally, I I'm so practiced at it now of accepting, not that I'm like better or worse than anybody else, but it's just like, yeah, it's just a practice. So mm-hmm. I do pray that it happens. I am ready to be pregnant. So
we're both in these transitional points, you to have your second pregnancy, me to have my fourth baby, and mm-hmm. wherever you guys are at on this path as well, we see you, solidarity. We're not better at it than anyone else or anything. We're not subject to all the same things just because, mm-hmm. you know, we have other kids or because we're doctors. Like, it's just, this is the collective. This is the solidarity of women becoming mothers, and we can all tap into this, that there's been women before us. There's going to certainly be women ahead of us that are going to have to experience the same things. And so it's just like part of the life. So we wanted to talk about it, kind of an atypical episode, not necessarily medical, but part of our thoughts. So anyways, have a beautiful week, the rest of your guys' week.
Perfect. Bye.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Healthy as a Mother podcast. In order for others to hear this information, please leave a review with Apple Podcasts, subscribe, and send to a friend who could benefit from this content. We're so excited to share more on becoming and being a mother next time.
And please remember that the ideas and views of this podcast are for informational purposes only and are not intended to serve as a substitute for medical care of any kind, including the diagnosis or treatment of any illness or disease. Consult with your provider before integrating this information into your own care plan. And remember, a healthier future starts now, and it starts with you.